Others.
American media is a business, and it has a mission, not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
Yes, back from the dead, this is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the Internet for Friday, January 21, 2005. I have been sicker than sick. I've been sick to a level which I have never been sick before. For future reference, whenever I refer to phase 10 being sick, it'll be reference to how sick I was yesterday. This was horrible. I spent the entire day sleeping. I was up from time to time, but I am since recovering now. My fever broke at about 2 in the morning, so now, you know, I'm back in front of a microphone screaming into the internet, once again bringing you the news you need to stay alive. Yes, yes. And we have feedback right off the top. Sean, listening to your SKTFM episodes for a second time around. First was a live broadcast. I picked up a whole pile of books, which you recommended. Steal This Computer Book 3. Wow, what a great book. Thanks for the recommendation. A quote which made me think about your not swearing from this book said, perhaps the only form of censorship we have to worry about is self-censorship, when people are either too frightened to speak honestly and openly about anything they want, or so close-minded that they're willing to shut their minds to any new ideas that disrupt their static way of thinking. Once that happens, usually under the guise of political correctness, censorship may finally succeed in stifling free speech. That's from Wallace Wang. Now, that's never been more true than it is true now. I mean, we have, you know, this terrorism thing is the terrorism of the 2000s, the same as the Red Scare communism back in the 50s. I mean, everything is terrorist. You're either with us or you're against us. You know, this is insanity. And more than that, it's fascist. I mean, let's cut the crap. We know that our government has become corrupt. We know that they're just pandering to the haves and they don't give a shit about the have-nots. And we're talking about a nation here that uses three-quarters of the world's resources. So, realistically, it's all going to come down, and they're going to fight really hard to stop it from coming down. But one of the ways they're going to be able to stop that and how they're going to fight it is by, of course, locking in their own people. They don't want people talking or saying bad things or getting free speech out. That's why, you know, media is so controlled, and that's why it is so vitally important that I do these shows and that other people do shows like this, that you distribute media. Do not hate the media. Become the media. That was a letter from Forleet. I also got another one here. Dear Sean, you're doing great things, man. Love what you do. However, the drones are having too much fun and too busy slaving away to care or to listen. I have been burning your newsreels and giving them to my friends and family. I really do hope all is not lost. Many of the things you have been talking about, I have been saying for years, and of course, shunned for it. I really do struggle at my work every day, as I know I am just contributing to the waste of this world. However, I find comfort that I am learning skills that can help me and others. I'm an apprentice electrician. I'm not too computer savvy, though, yet I'm confident in my survival skills. Would that make me a wog? I'm pretty sure there is no entrance for you. Thanks. Keep it up, man. One true word. Okay. Now, once again, the wog thing is just a word. It was just an alliance key that I used to help people have something to identify with. If you want to be a wog, you're a wog, just like that. Same way I'm Sean Kennedy TFM, simply because I'm Sean Kennedy TFM. That's all there is to it. You just decide on that, and you move with it. Now, as to the waste of the world and all the rest of it, I don't think that being an electrician is a waste of the world, actually. I think quite often that engineers are of any type or variety. I mean, an electrician is a type of engineer, even though, you know, some people may think they're just running cable or whatever. I don't think so. I think that these are really valuable skills that if everything were to fall apart, these are the people that we would be relying on. So don't try not to let the desperation of the planet get you down. I know it's a rough go, but it's important for all of us that we try to soldier on, because it can't be like this forever. Something is going to happen. Something is going to break, and when it does, things will shift.
Maybe they'll shift for the good, maybe they'll shift for the bad, but the point is that they will shift. Things are always changing. Moving on to Sort Yourself Out. Dear Sean, I have two questions. You mentioned a few times on your show that while trying to relax, you prefer things that are non-productive, like exercising / reading. I want to know why you don't recommend things like video games, even slower paced ones like RPGs. Being 19 and in college, I can't help but make my preferred escape. I can't help but make that my preferred escape. Sorry. My second question, what herbal medicine do you recommend for the normal aches / pains? I've been doing St. John's wort in my tea to relax, but I need something for when I really feel like crap. Thanks, Lung Kisser. Now, the interesting thing here is that everyone wants a magic bullet. Everyone wants a way that we can just stop ourselves from feeling pain. If we could eliminate pain altogether from our lives, we would do that. And who is to say that would be wrong? I mean, who wants to live with pain? Now, this reminds me of something that I saw in the movie The Hunted. I don't know if you've ever seen the film. It's with Christopher Lambert. It's not a really fantastic film, but it does have some cool samurai stuff in it. Now, in the beginning of the movie, there's this chick, and she's about to get geeked by this ninja guy. And, of course, the chick's really hot. And the ninja dude shows the chick his face, which no ninja would ever do, but that's okay. And he asks the chick, he says, "Would you like to die quickly or slowly?" Which is kind of a Japanese thing to ask, but whatever. And the chick says, "I would like to die slowly and in much pain so that I know what it was to be alive." Now, there is something to be said for this. If we medicate all of our pains away, the scale and coping mechanism of our natural body will begin to deteriorate. That means that if pain is entirely subjective. A person who has lived with pain their entire lives could probably stub their toe and not feel any, you know, pain from it or whatever because, you know, they're accustomed to pain. Whereas a person who's never felt pain would stub their toe and, you know, be crippled, fall into a small screaming ball on the floor. We must be careful not to over-medicate ourselves and not make us immune to pain. We have to make sure that we have some suffering in our life. Now, if you're constantly in agony and you're constantly feeling bad, I would go back to the default of diet. I mean, if your diet's crap, then, that's probably the number one thing right there. You should be eating 6 small meals a day. Do some research. Best bodybuilding book I ever found was that Body for Life. The guy's a Myoplex whore. I mean, he totally wants to pimp the Myoplex stuff. You don't have to pimp all the supplements that he's using, but, I mean, the basic concept of that, the Body for Life is almost very similarly based on an old bodybuilding system called Cybergenics, which was, I did that when I was in the Army for a little while. And it's, again, it's all about the supplements and the workout routine and all the rest of it. But I believe that the number one way to stop yourself from feeling bad, of course, is to exercise in the mornings and to eat right. Really, that's all there is to it. If you're totally feeling like crap all the time, maybe have a coffee, I guess. I don't know. Perk yourself up that way. But the thing is that once you fall into the rut of constantly drinking coffee, blah, 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 you wind up getting addicted to that in your own way. And then, you know, before you know it, you're, you know, having 30 cups of coffee a day. Which there are people out there like that. I mean, it may sound hard to believe, but there's people out there who go through like a 6-pack of Coke a day. There's people out there who go through like, you know, a 6-pack of Red Bull or any other kind of speed beer a day. And that's because they're addicted, because they have to keep up with this crazy pace we've set for society. And it's unfortunate, but there it is. So in answer to that, I would recommend, dude, that you just work on your diet. Eat 6 small meals. If you can't actually pull off 6 small meals, get yourself some of those meal supplement shakes or whatever. You could use those. Those are pretty good to substitute for a meal. But they got to be 6 small meals, because if you eat 6 large meals, everybody will get super fat. On to the opinion segment. Dear Sean, I live in Arizona, and schools down here are fucked. It's sad to say, but true. How can we change the rules? It's never been done, but needs to be. Down here, shit's hit the fan, and you know modern schools are outdated and ill-equipped for future citizen. Thanks, faithful Wog, Grant. Okay, now, this is something that, you know, 15 years ago, I'd be like, gee, man, I don't know what to tell you. But now, thanks to the wonders of the internet, I can say, you know what? You can be responsible for your own education. Cover your own ass. You cannot fix the world. I know. I've tried. If you want to fix the world, what you have to do is you have to start with yourself. Like Michael Jackson says, I'm starting with the man in the mirror. Okay? You've got to look at your life, look at where you are, and see how you can improve on yourself. This is why I talk about things like role-playing games and things like that, where you drop a character sheet for yourself. If you don't know what I'm talking about here because you've never done any role-playing games, well, do some research on it. But you should do up like a sheet for yourself. See what your own strengths and weaknesses are and try to see where you'd like to improve. Try to determine the kind of person that you would like to be. Now, in the form of education, when it's talking about the schools down in the States, well, you know, naturally the United States has the opinion that, you know, if we have the money and you don't, then screw you. You get to die in the gutter and we of the super rich elite will, you know, carry on tirading through the universe, waltzing through it like some kind of cosmic Betty Burke. But unfortunately, for the young people and for the upcoming generations and for all the people who weren't privileged, weren't born with money, and maybe actually came from low-income background families and stuff like that, I mean, half the time, most of the screwed-up kids, if they make it through their teenage years, are usually trying to unscrew themselves by the time they're about 30. If you can pull it off by the time you're about 30 to unscrew up your life, that'd be great. But some people spend like their entire lives trying to deal with the problems and trauma they've experienced in their childhood, which is unfortunate, but it's also true. Now, with the internet, you have, for the first time in history, you have the ability to be responsible for your own education. Because you sent me this email, it means you know how to use the computer and you know how to write and read. This is all you need for an education. There are people who started with less than what you have been able to soldier on to do amazingly great things. It's not so much a question of education, it's a question of will. It's a question of what are you willing to do to make a difference. That's what it's all about. It's about the will to educate yourself. Do you really want to educate yourself, or do you just want to take a little blue pill and then everything will be okay? Because, you know, both of those things are possible. If you want to just medicate and deal with your life and have some low-income crappy job for the rest of your life, then you know, that's possible. You know, you can do that, you can take the blue pills and you'll be happy. Or you can work a crappy job, suffer a lot, learn as much as you can, strive, claw, fight tooth and nail for a chance at something better. It's unfortunate, but it's kind of the American way. Or you can marry rich. This is the only real options we have open to us. It doesn't really sound that promising, does it? But luckily, we do have the internet where we're able to communicate with each other, where we're able to, broadcast thoughts and ideas, where you're able to ask a question like this, and I'm able to answer you. So there's no way to fix the school system down there, because the school system's fucked. So the only thing you're going to be able to do, man, is, try to educate yourself, and if you got a certain set of friends down there that you're into, and they all think that, you know, you guys are all operating on the same frequency, you know, give them a couple copies of Newsreel, share with them the information, share the media, and make sure everybody gets educated so we all get smart. If you become accountable for your own education, I mean, realistically, at that level, there's no limit to what you can do. You no longer have the bar of, oh, well, that's an A, that's all I have to do. You know, because in schools they do that. You only have to do this much. But now when you're in charge of your own education, you don't have to just do that much. Now you can obsess about chemistry. You can get as wigged out on chemistry as you want, or math, or computers, or art, or what have you. Unfortunately, probably not the answer you wanted to hear, but it's about the only one you got, and especially in today's political climate. You know, if you're going to school in the States, you start making waves, you'll get labeled a terrorist and wind up getting thrown in the slammer pretty quick. That's just, you know, my particular thought. Now we're on to the news, and oh boy, do I have a bunch of it for you. Winning the hearts and minds of the MPAA propaganda. Now this stuff makes me nuts. Junior Achievement Incorporated today, now who the hell thought up that name, today announced that its school year will add a new program to its curriculum entitled What's the Diff? Designed to teach middle grade students responsible digital citizenship. Holy shit. The education is about the importance of respecting copyrights and not engaging in illegally downloading or swapping protected materials on the internet. Respecting the intellectual property laws of others is not only the legal thing to do, it's the right thing to do, said David Chernow, president and CEO of Junior Achievement Incorporated. Young people face a lot of ethical challenges these days, and to improve the use of their internet is one of them. What? Young people face a lot of ethical challenges these days, and improper use of the internet is one of them. That makes a little more sense, but not really. Illegally downloading copyrighted materials hinders our economy. Right. And stunts ethical development of future workforce. Right. This cuts to the core of what Junior Achievement is all about. The primary goal of the program, which includes introductory information on copyrights, hands-on interactive classroom activities, and take-home materials, is to help students understand that illegally downloading or duplicating copyrighted material is no different than walking into a store and stealing it. It has been integrated into Junior Achievement's program beginning October 1, 2003, and has potential to reach 900,000 students, grades 5 through 9, in more than 36,000 classrooms nationwide over the course of an academic year. Nearly 20,000 classroom kits have been distributed in the last week. Now, this, of course, is blatant propaganda. You've got to be digital citizens? What the fuck? No. See, the problem is when Russia had the printing press, what they would do in Russia was they would alter the print, each individual printing press, so that if somebody printed something, they could look at the document that was printed and they could see, you know, maybe the E was a little bit off or the A was a little crooked or something like that, and they'd be able to figure out who owned the printing press that printed out this, you know, this treasonous document, or the document that the government didn't agree with. And what this thing here is this is just another step that the MPAA and the RIAA is trying to take in order to brainwash the young people of today. Unfortunately, it's not going to work, because young people are a hell of a lot smarter than a lot of people think. They're going to look at this and go, whatever, dude, shut the fuck up. You trying to tell me that Time Warner is hurting for cash? You know what, I'm going to wind up denying myself information passed on to me. Like, okay, for example, let's say, now, I'm a big fan of Ghost in the Shell. Okay, everyone knows that. I'm a huge Ghost in the Shell nut. But I am absolutely certain that if you look at, Ghost in the Shell is good because it ties into really, really cutting philosophical and educational premises. Like, they talk a lot about the same things that Marshall McLuhan used to talk about. Nobody knows who Marshall McLuhan is because we don't talk about that. He was the guy who coined the phrase, the media is the message, where he was also a guy who said that using computers and television to augment education is as useless as trying to use an X-ray machine as a space heater. We should be using the internet and using multimedia presentation as a way to hyper-educate people, not try to hold them back, not try to limit their potential and sculpt them in the way that we want. This is bullshit. This is complete bullshit. And that's just blatant propaganda. And I'm more offended by that than I am of, like, you know, religious groups trying to press creationism into schools. Because at least the religious groups believe, they honestly believe that what they're doing is correct. But, you know, these guys are just scumbags. Acid versus booze. Now, this is great because Frank Ogden was talking to me on the show. I had him on the Sean Kennedy TV show for a while there. And he was telling me that back in the 60s, they used to feed people like massive doses of acid to beat alcoholism. And in this article, they don't actually say acid, but listen to this. A hallucinogenic drug popular in the 60s could help scientists find a medical treatment for alcoholism, U.S.'s researchers believe. The University of California team says Ibogaine blocked alcohol cravings in rats by boosting a brain's protein. Okay, it was already thought it could combat addiction, but scientists have been wary as the drug is also toxic. It is hoped a treatment which works the same way as Ibogaine, but without the side effects, could be developed. In the UK, about 2.9 million adults, 7% of the population, are alcohol dependent. That's because they have pubs every 10 feet in England. You can't, you know, throw a dead cat without hitting a pub in England. Alcohol misuse is linked to 22,000 deaths a year and costs the economy £20 billion a year in lost production and treatment. People who misuse alcohol tend to be treated through counseling, although there are a few drugs available and are sometimes used in conjunction with rehabilitation programs. Hey, I've got an idea. Why don't you just ditch booze and bring back marijuana instead of alcohol? There's a thought. I mean, you don't get this problem with the amount of pot, you know. I'm just going with what I've read here. I mean, generally people go, oh, no, but that's like cigarette smoking. No, because people who smoke cigarettes generally smoke like 20 cigarettes a day. That's like a pack, right? But if you smoke 20 joints a day, well, you're Buddha, okay? If you can smoke 20 joints a day, you're pretty much a religious figure. I don't even think the really hardcore Rastafarians smoke 20 joints a day. But regardless of that, if you were smoking like, say, 4 joints a day, even that would be way out of control. I don't think the damage would be as bad as if, you were pounding away the booze. And when was the last time you heard of somebody getting high and beating up their wife or shooting their kids? Just a thought. Custom skin. How spider is this? Check this out. Scientists are developing an inkjet printer that can create made-to-measure skin and bones to treat people with severe burns or disfigurements. The University of Manchester team say that inkjets will be able to print out tailor-made human cells to fit on a patient's exact dimensions. Human cells are suspended in a nutrient-rich liquid before being printed out in several thin layers. Project leaders say the method could be used to build an organ in a day. Professor Brian Derby, head of Link of the Inkjet Printing of Human Cells Project research team, said the technology has tremendous potential.
Yeah,
I would say it's got tremendous potential for sure. I mean, one of the things you could do with that is, you could change the color of your skin. Granted that this technology is only going to be, it's bleeding edge right now, but let's fast forward this about 6-8 years, and you're going to find that people will be able to, suddenly, maybe if we're able to embed things inside the cells, what if we could put, that same sort of transparent display cells, that thin plastic film, so that people could, even advertise on their skin, or they could have scrolling displays on their backs and things like that. Wouldn't that be great? Just, you think I'm out of control? That's how I can make these kind of predictions, is because all you have to do is take a look at technology like that, see how, the core political could twist and warp and mutate that into, some hideously bad advertising thing, and that's generally what will happen. Now, check this out. Monday, the 24th, is the worst day of the year, apparently. Misery is expected to peak on Monday, as 24 January has been pinpointed as the worst day of the year. January has long been regarded as one of the darkest months, but a formula from a part-time tutor at Cardiff University shows it gets even worse this Monday, so he's a part-time tutor. Foul weather, debt, fading Christmas memories, failed resolutions, and a lack of motivation conspire to depress, Cliff Arnalds found. GPs say exercise and reading up on depression are ways to beat the blues. Yes, we do see lots of people with depression and anxiety in the winter months. The message is not a terrible disorder. People do get better, Royal College General Practitioner Spokesman Dr. Alan Cohen said. Exercise and bibliotherapy, that is, reading a number of books to allow people to understand their own symptoms and how to control them, were initial treatments, he said. So, bibliotherapy. Now, reading is a therapy form. Talk about happy horseshit. This is, this is such a placebo. If we tell you this is going to be the worst day of the year, that will be the worst day of the year. This is all if we all agree that this is the way reality is, this is the way the reality is. Remember when you were a child? Would you ever consider that the 24th of January would be considered the worst day of the year? No, you wouldn't. The reason why you wouldn't is because, when you're a child, ideally, when you're a child, you have less to worry about. You don't concern yourself with so many of these crazy things that we nutty adults always do. That is, of course, if you got a family who gives a shit about you and all the other things that go with that, but that's neither here nor there. Now, personally, I think that the people on the web, the WOGs, the whatnot, the cyberpunks, quite often we have a different criteria, different things have priority in our lives than just, the average Joe Schmuck who's worried about, his TCP reports and all the rest of it. And that's why I think a lot of us, because we've opted out of the general culture, we don't have to worry about that kind of crap. Yeah, we got the anxiety because we know the world's turning to shit. Yeah, we're all afraid because George Bush is going crazy and he's locking everybody up for talking. But you can't deny the fact that, as cyberpunks, we're kind of immune to a lot of these, and we're not really bummed if our sports team didn't make it to the Super Bowl. Generally, a lot of the cyberpunk culture doesn't really give all the major holidays, like the shopping concentration camp that Christmas has become. We're kind of immune to that. So there's a lot of bonuses to being part of the culture, and I think that's one of them. Two more casualties, and that's a sad story. Two men have pleaded guilty to copyright infringement for distributing music, software, and movies over the internet in the first U.S. conviction for piracy over peer-to-peer networks. This is very sad. William Trowbridge, 50, of Johnson City, New York, and Michael, I'm going to screw up his name here, Michael Chicoin, 47, of San Antonio, face up to 5 years in prison and a fine of $250,000 in the criminal convictions stemming from the August raid of the Justice Department, said late Tuesday. Now, this is obviously just a complete slap suit to scare the shit out of everyone. Sentencing is set for April 29 in the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia. Now, they're going to do 5 years in jail and $250,000 in fine. 5 years in the slammer. Are these people a threat to society? No, they're not a threat to society at all. They're a threat to the core political, but they're not a threat to society. Hell, I'd like to know these guys, because apparently they give out free movies. The recording industry has sued more than 7,000 individuals who copy its songs over popular peer-to-peer networks like Kazaa, and has urged the government to get involved. Hey, you should get involved with this, because we got a lot of money, and you should, do something about this. But authorities have to date largely concentrated on elite groups of hackers. Oh, I like that. I like that. That's that we're hackers. The people who copy a movie and give it out, that's all you have to do to be a hacker. To be a hacker, you rip a movie, put it on Kazaa, and instantly you're a hacker. Who steal and distribute movies music, who steal and distribute movies, music, and software? What if you bought the movie, rip it, and give it away because you want to? As a matter of fact, that said, isn't the act of giving a DVD at Christmas, giving someone a gift at Christmas, isn't that in essence piracy? Because realistically, if I steal or if I buy a movie and I decide to give it to a person or I want to give it to 10 people for Christmas, then, you know, realistically, isn't that piracy because they didn't pay for it? Maybe I paid for it. Maybe I didn't. But, you know, they haven't committed any crimes. All they did was accept a free gift. It seems a little dodgy to me. But keeping in time with this, we've got a really scary story here. Now, if anyone out there is involved politically or has ties to political groups, this is something that you're going to want to get involved with. Proposed legislation would be a blow to file-sharing companies. A bill introduced in the California legislature last Friday seeks to do what U.S. federal courts have so far refused to do. The bill will criminalize selling, advertising, and distributing peer-to-peer file-sharing software. Now, this is kind of psycho because the software is just software. The software doesn't do anything illegal, even if, you know, you want to get right down to it. I don't even think the act of, you know, sharing information is illegal. But this is just software, and people use the software to distribute it. So I think that's, you know, legally might be a bit of a problem here. Written by State Senator Kevin Murray, a longtime lawmaker from the Los Angeles with close ties to the entertainment industry, the legislation is aimed at straight at the business plans of file sharing companies such as Grokster, Morpheus, and Kazaa. The bill would make it a crime to sell file sharing software without taking reasonable care to prevent copyright infringement and pornography swapping. Well, it's nice that they threw pornography in there, but that's the first time I've heard anybody saying pornography swapping was bad. As a matter of fact, what are they going to say then? We're concerned about the pornography industry? Give me a break. On Tuesday, file-sharing proponents blasted the bill. It's another edge of a sword that the entertainment cartel is attempting to use to gut the P2P application, said Matthew A. Necco, general counselor and vice president of Streamcast Networks, based in Woodland Hills, California. Streamcast Networks makes Morpheus, a file-sharing program, boasted 124 million downloads worldwide. Well, seems pretty obvious to me what's going on here. This is the prime example of what the core political is. Corporate political, and of course now we're just going to make laws to protect, you know, the corporations from people who are just trying to get information. It's kind of a sick thing. Now, this is a story about the Angel Light. Now, this story here, I bet you this will either get decried and said that this is a hoax, or it's going to get shut up real fast. So you might want to watch this one. Troy Hurtubise has done the seemingly impossible with his newest invention and defied all known rules of physics, he says. The Angel Light, Hurtubise claims, is the concept came to him in a reoccurring dream. Danger, danger. Can reportedly see through walls as if there's no barrier at all. That's not all, though. Hurtubise, 41, said the device detects stealth technology. Oh, yeah, you shouldn't have said that out loud. And he's done tests to prove it. So how's he proved this, you may ask? Well, it seems that he's done with the covert help of scientists at famed MIT. This is what he says. Anyway, now what kind of seems a little disturbing to me is the fact that he's had to, he's had to do it covert. Like, why wouldn't the scientists at MIT just help him out? Hurtubise said the reps were so impressed with the 8-foot-long device, they paid him $40,000 in cash to put the finishing touches on it. Well, now, apparently, he's going to flog this thing to the French. This is his concept here. He's going to wind up punting this thing off to the French and make it all happen. But unfortunately, since this story is going to be run, I'm running it, and it's now on the web, so it's only going to be a matter of time before the CIA and all the people find out about it. It's only going to be a matter of time before they show up and, you know, commandeer this and declare him a terrorist and probably lock him up and torture the living snot out of him to get all the information. Because, as we all know, thanks to the next story, torture is okay for the CIA. CIA officers and other non-military personnel fall outside of the bounds of the 2002 directive issued by President Bush that he pledged the humane treatment of prisoners in U.S. custody. So the CIA is allowed to torture people. Washington officers of the Central Intelligence Agency and other non-military personnel fall outside of the bounds of a 2002 directive issued by President George W. Bush that the pledge of humane treatment of prisoners in U.S. custody. Alberto Gonzalez, the White House counselor, said in a document. Well, that's outstanding. In written responses to questions by senators as part of their consideration of his nomination to be Attorney General, this is the same guy who thinks that the Geneva Convention's quaint. Gonzalez said a separate congressional ban on cruel and unusual and inhumane treatment had a limited reach and did not apply in all cases to aliens overseas, because they're not people, they're fucking aliens. That position has a clear implications for prisoners held in U.S. custody at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, and Iraq, legal analysis said. At that same time, however, the president has a clear policy opposing torture, and the CIA and other non-military personnel are fully bound by it, Gonzalez said. Wait a minute, let me just read that again. At the same time, the president has a clear policy opposing torture. But if he's got a clear policy opposing torture, and he's just said that the CIA and other non-military fall outside of the bounds of opposing torture, that statement doesn't make any sense. The administration's views on torture and treatment of prisoners have been the focus of a confirmation process for Gonzalez. A number of senators have pressed him for a fuller explanation, unsatisfied with the answers he gave in a hearing before the Senate Judiciary Committee. His written responses, totaling more than 200 pages on torture and other questions released Tuesday by committee Democrats, offered one of the administration's most expansive statements of its positions on a variety of issues, particularly regarding laws and policy governing CIA interrogations of terror suspects. Now, just out of curiosity, I would wonder if using drugs on, interrogating prisoners and stuff like that, I wonder if that would count. You know, if we shoot you up full of sodium pentothal, does that count as, does that count as torture? Or do you have to actually be in pain? What counts as torture? That's something I'd be interested to know. But, you know, regardless, this is what happens when you cannot hold your government accountable. We've lost the ability to hold the United States government accountable. We can see that now. We're involved in a war that nobody wants to be in. We have spending that's out of control. We have government in the back pocket of big business. And we have no way to hold these people accountable. And in history, when this has happened, there's violent revolution. And unless the United States government gets on board and figures out that, you know what, people are getting really pissed off with them, and their own people are getting really pissed off with them, they're going to have to deal with some violent revolution. And I'm sorry to say that. You can put me in jail for saying that, but it's the truth. I mean, you don't have to be a poli-sci professor to figure that out. It's just crazy. Now, how about an RFID pen? This is kind of an interesting thing here. The new RFID-enabled pen will be shown for the first time at Paper World Expedition in Frankfurt, jointly developed by a Dutch company, Allwright, and Fisher Space Pen, using SockiMat RFID pen tags. The pens offer a number of benefits other than the ability to write on paper. The idea behind the pen is the RFID tag would give the owner a unique ID that can hence be used in a number of very useful ways. We're not so sure how useful it will be. The manufacturers of the pen have used the following examples in their press announcements. The article goes on and talks about how, you know, Paul Smith gets this pen and he's able to go get a free Coke and get a free lunch. And at the end of the big, you know, Congress meeting or whatever the hell it is, he's able to, you know, he drops the pen off and then he gets it sent back to him and he's all happy because he's now uses the pen in a special pen holder as a log-on at his computer station. So all he's got to do is, instead of going through, you know, the really tedious process of entering a password, all you got to do is put his high pen into his pen stand, and he's good to go. That's all he's got to do. Well, except for the problem that all I got to do now, Paul, is get your pen, and I've got root on everything you do. This is stupid, in a word. It's really ineffective and just badly thought out. It's one of those kind of masturbatory technology things. Now, not that I have anything opposed to masturbatory technology. I think that some technology is fun to exploit. But don't try telling me that, having an RFID pen is some kind of security thing. Because it's not. It's totally insecure. Incidentally, I'd like to know who writes these articles. Because I don't know if you can pick up on this, but I have to stop and start some of these articles like 3 or 4 times. Because the flow is so incredibly bad. Have you noticed how difficult people's composition has been lately? Just in the newspaper and stuff like that, it's like they're trying to make tech stories and stories about security and the internet. And all stuff. They're trying to make these things like hard to process and hard to understand. But if you read a story about, you know, like, some single mom who's, you know, trying to get a sex change operation or something like that, you'll find that, oh, yeah, that's written at grade 3 reading level. You know, that's interesting how they do that. I wonder if that's really by accident or not. Here's a good one. Fingerprints for food. Hang on to your hats. This is really going to make your teeth hurt. Fingerprint technology is now being harnessed at K-12 schools around the nation for school lunches. Students simply place a forefinger on a small reader by the register. Public schools, such as those in Penn, Cambria, and Wilson school districts in Pennsylvania, have adopted this technology to speed operations, simplify payment, limit lunch fraud, and bullying. Lunch fraud, because we wouldn't want children eating and not paying for it, because that would be lunch fraud. And bullying. I'm guessing that much like the prisons, other kids are taking other kids' lunches. Improved National School Lunch Program, NSLP, participation, and improved reimbursement for programs such as the Title I, E-Rate, and No Child Left Behind, which use the NSLP food service data to gauge poverty. That's disgusting when you're gauging poverty. Why don't we fix the poverty? So why don't you just not spend on your military for 1 year, okay? Unlike cash, tickets, and swipe cards, which can be lost or stolen, your fingers are always with you, and no one can use them to gain fraudulent access to your account. That is, of course, unless they, figure out a way to take your fingerprint, put it onto, like, say, a small finger condom and with a piece of sticky tape, and then they can just scan it in that way. That's possible. Allaying fears of identity theft, Mitch Johns, president of Food Service Solutions, the company that implemented the biometric use of fingerprints in Penn California School District, as well as scores of schools and colleges throughout the U.S., is quick to point out that his system does not store any of the prints. I call bullshit. I totally call bullshit. This is exactly the kind of data, you know, when people buy information, they usually buy like names, addresses, phone numbers, that kind of a thing, and they sell these things for big money. Well, the next thing that people are going to be buying as part of the whole information commerce thing is going to be your fingerprints. If you don't think this guy's actually storing the information, it's bullshit. Of course he's storing the information. Don't give me that. How else, if it doesn't store the information, how else are they going to know which fingerprint belongs to what kids? Oh, yeah, that's right. Biometrics technology has brought much-needed anonymity to our food service program, says Dr. Russell Strange, superintendent of the Penn Cambria School District. Biometrics technology has brought a much-needed anonymity to our food service program. Okay, I don't know how fingerprinting your students in any way seems to be anonymous, but that's okay. Not even the cashier knows which students are free or reduced, and the students and parents have responded well. That's because they don't really know what the hell is going on. You know, they don't really see. They only see that, oh, well, my kid's getting fingerprinted, and he doesn't have to feel like he's, you know, low income because we can't afford to pay our kids because we're working, you know, six jobs and everyone's making minimum wage. You know, we're all wage slaves, and now our children get to feel better, and all we got to do is sacrifice their privacy and their fingerprints, their biometric information, and our kids get fed. This is disgusting. Now, I rip on religion all the time. I rip on religion because religion is... See, there's two schools of thought. You either believe in sort of a cosmic God-type figure, which makes it the reason why you have to be nice to other people, or you go hardcore capitalist, and it's me first and the gimme-gimmies, and screw everyone else, and at the end of the day, there will be 10 of us standing holding the severed heads of all the millions of people we've trod upon high, and everybody else dies. And that's sort of the capitalist dogma. Or you have the religious dogma where it's like God... We will all die for our God. We believe that God is good, God is holy, all the rest of it. Now, this is an infuriating story. So I'll just get through this. You'll see what I mean. Rage and fury has gripped this tsunami-hit tiny Hindu village in India's southern Tamil Nadu after a group of Christian missionaries allegedly refused them aid for not agreeing to follow their religion. Samanthepatati, geez, I wish I spoke Thai, near the temple town of Madurai, faced near devastation on December 26 when a massive tidal wave wiped it clean of homes and lives. Most of the 200 people here are homeless or displaced, battling to rebuild lives and locate lost family members, besides facing risks of epidemic disease and trauma, which, you know, anybody who knows anything about what's going on over there, that is the 10th layer of suck. Jubilant at seeing the relief trucks loaded with food, clothes, and much-needed medicines, the villagers, many of who had not had a square meal in days, were shocked when the nuns asked them to convert before distributing biscuits and water. Heated arguments broke out as the locals forcibly tried to stop the relief trucks from leaving. The missionaries, who rushed into their cars on seeing television reporters and cameras refusing to comment on the incident, managed to leave the village. Now, this is... You know, people talk about a Christian thing to do. That's a Christian thing to do right there. Right there. believe what we want you to believe, believe what we tell you, or we're not giving you this food. Wow. You know, it's times like this where I really hope there is a Christian God, because if there is one, you know, I have a better chance of getting into heaven than these pricks do. Many NGO volunteer groups are extending help to us, but they're in our village, and the NGO, which is till now helping us, well, this is totally badly written. We are staunch followers of the Hindu religion and refused their request. After that, these people with their aid materials are leaving the village and distributing that to us. Okay, this is broken English by some guy named Ranjit Kumar. Sorry, dude. So, you know, what does that say to these people? What does that say to the people of Thailand when they have, you know, these good American slash white, you know, whatever their nationality is? They show up with food trucks and they say, you know what? We want you to totally renounce your culture. We totally want you to renounce, you know, a few thousand years of your culture in this sacred place to convert to our religion. You know, this is a lose-lose scenario because, of course, the Hindu religion is just a religion like any other religion. You know, I'd probably be a little pissed being a Hindu right about now because my village got wiped out. You know, I'd be wondering what my God was doing. But, yeah, it's a pretty sick state of affairs. So next time Christians start stepping up to you about that stuff, you might want to remember that little story. It's a good one. And, of course, more cyber FUD. This is great. As David Perry left a cybersecurity conference in Luxembourg in 2004, an airport terminal handling international flights was in chaos. A network worm known as Sasser was scorching the world's computer systems and had knocked out the airport's reservation desk, stranding delegates at the terminal. Dun, dun, dun. I love it when they use terms like scorching and stuff like that. In a fable for the information age, Jesus, what happened, dude? Did your fiction novel not get published and so you turned to writing news? Conference attendees, among them some of the world's foremost computer security experts, flipped open their laptops and reopened the terminal in a matter of minutes. Dun, dun, dun! The paradox of the internet, a computer network originally designed to survive nuclear attack, succumbing to spam, viruses, and other malicious code written by teenagers. Uh-huh. That's right. Spam, viruses, malicious code are all written by teenagers. I love the way this is written. Look at the slant on this. Yeah, kids. Kids are evil. Kids are evil. It's those damn wogs out there listening to Sean Kennedy. Yeah, he's the problem. You bet. We need to shut him up, because if we shut him up, then, you know, everything will just, you know, go back to the way it was, and no one will say anything bad, and if it's out of sight, it's out of mind. Talk about bullshit. We actually have people abandoning using their computers because it's just too much trouble. Well, yeah, when you're sitting there putting out as much crap as you do, and realistically, do we really think there's that many people writing these viruses, or who else thinks that maybe these antivirus software companies are writing the viruses? Maybe it's just me, I don't know. Said Perry, Global Director of Education for International Computer Security Company, Trend Micro. If that's the case, if it's too much trouble to use the system, then certain changes needed to be made. Dun, dun, dun. Very 9/11, pal. Sounds good. Oh, here it is. Had to work that in there. Following the September 11th attacks, fears that terrorists would open a new front in cyberspace spurred Congress to appropriate billions of dollars to improve the security of the nation's electronic infrastructure. The government accelerated the process already underway to defend its most critical systems from attack, sometimes physically disengaging them from the outside world, computer experts say. Now, I'm aware that there are problems with the internet. I'm aware that we have viruses, and it doesn't matter who writes them, they exist. But don't try telling me, and especially this article, the way it's angled, it makes it look like, yeah, these computer security specials, they just turned on the computers and seconds later they put everything back, you know, right as rain. Did this actually happen, by the way? Does anyone know if that's legit? If that really did occur? Is that just this dipshit here trying to, you know, say stuff to make his article sound better? I'll say it happened. Sure, I'll say that. But I don't appreciate him saying malicious code written by teenagers. You know, teenagers are the bad thing here. You know, personally, spam, viruses, and other malicious code are fairly complex. These are not simple things. Most teenagers, you know, used to be afraid that they'd all be smoking pot, sticking needles in their arm. Now are upset because they're, you know, writing sophisticated code. Maybe there's a way we could utilize this rather than trying to destroy this. And again, nice work on the September 11th, you know, after the September 11th attacks, which no computers were used. Well, they could attack us with computers. Yeah, you bet. The Taliban are all about computers. Wait, no, they're not. The Taliban hate technology. They all want to live in mud huts with rocks and put, you know, beekeeper suits on their women. So what makes you think that the Taliban is going to attack us with computers. Now, granted, you know, anything's an attack medium, and I totally appreciate that. But I wouldn't really put computer attack from people who, you know, aren't really big fans of electricity in the very, you know, top margin of concern. You know, that's just me, though. Maybe I'm out of whack here. And here's an article that strikes close to home. Now, this is one of those articles that was online and vanished. I had it sent to me by email. I checked the links that were sent to me. It led to different articles that weren't the same article. It's from a very good source who I will not name. And you're going to have to take my word for it. But this is from the Washington Post. If someone can get me a link to this, I tried to find it. I couldn't. The NIH revises a plan for quick free access to study results. Now, check this out. An ambitious proposal to make the results of a federally funded medical research available to the public quickly and for free has been scaled back by the National Institute of Health under pressure from the scientific publishers, who argue that the plan would eat up their profits and harm the scientific enterprises they support. Wow. So freely distributed information about health will harm their profits and harm the scientific enterprises they support. The initial plan, encouraged by Congress and hailed by patient advocacy groups, called for results of NIH-funded research to be posted on public accessible web, so within a public accessible website, within 6 months after they are published in a scientific journal. Most research results now are available only by subscription to the journal, at a cost that often reaches into the thousands of dollars, or on a pay-per-article basis that can cost $100 or more for 2 or 3 articles. In the final version of the plan, however, the recommended 6-month deadline for posting results has been stretched to 1 year. Now, I ask you, why? Why would you do this? This is really where, you know, there is no ethics in the medical industry. This is a sickness industry where they know that you could save lives with something like this. You could save lives by getting the information out to people, but they don't want to lose their profits. What do you say to that? What do you say to that? You people are going to hell. That's all there is to it. Holy crap. Now, look overseas. What's happening there will soon enough happen over here. I bet you dollars to donuts. Death Row TV, Thailand, is starting live internet broadcasts of life behind prison walls, including convicts' last moments before execution, in a bid to deter lawbreaking, especially a burgeoning number of drug dealers. Though no date has been fixed to begin the broadcast, cameras have already been installed in Bak Wang Maximum Security Prison, the outskirts of Bangkok, which houses more than 6,000 inmates. Nearly 1,000 are sentenced to death, and 65 are awaiting execution with no appeals pending. From now on, people can see life in the prison through the internet, said Corrections Department Chief Nathi Chaswang. The broadcast will show inmates' daily lives, as well as last minutes of condemned men as they're being taken off from their cells to execution. The internet will show how we treat convicts in their last minutes, including the preparation process, but the time of execution, the viewer will be allowed to see only part of the process. Thailand executes drug traffickers. The purpose of the broadcast was to make viewers, especially those tempted to deal drugs, aware of the future they could face. He said, it will also show how his department carries out its work. My work is to kill people. That's my work. That, to me, is truly disgusting. This is, you know, what is this what we're going to, is this what the bread and circus culture is going to leave us with? Is this what we're going to have? We're going to be watching executions on television, and that's what we're going to be forced to deal with? Sure, it'll start in Thailand, but does anyone out there really have a problem seeing George Bush doing stuff like this? I mean, when football just doesn't cut it for you anymore, and Aussie rules just doesn't have what it takes, why don't we just, you know, we can watch these people get killed. Don't put it on the streets, put it on TV. Here's some homework for you. Go check out an old movie called Videodrome. That's an old one. I think it's in the 70s. Peter Weller was in it. Do a search internet movie database on Videodrome. Good movie. Little dated, little Max Headroom-ish, but good stuff. I highly recommend you check it out. Well, that's it for this week, and I apologize for my stuffiness and my wonderful, you know, smoker's voice I got going on here. But hey, you know what? We got through it. It's all good. And that's it for this week. But Sim and I will be back on Monday to make sure you get the news you need to stay alive. This is a free broadcast brought to you by the generous donations of Jesse, Lars, Michael, Matt, Andrew, Kevin, Derek, Eric, Jason, Peter, Keith, Malcolm, Peter, Timor, Greg, Richard, WebLife, Drake, Matt, Evan, Brian, Ashton, David, Austin, Jonathan, Adam, William, Trevor, Jonathan, Mark, Kitsune, Art, Matthew, Christopher, Kyle, Justin, and Matthew. And if you would like to help keep this daily news broadcast on the air, please visit mintmedia.ca and make a donation there. Which, I had an interesting thing. I was talking to somebody the other day, it doesn't matter who it was, and they said, you know, Sean, it'd be kind of interesting to see what would happen if this really took off for you. And I said, yeah, I think so. I think it'd be great, you know, if, well, you know, you do the math. If we had 100,000 listeners and 10,000 donated 10 bucks or whatever, you know, it'd be pretty great. I'd be able to do a lot of good with that. And that's what I mean. Because if you could actually get that kind of funding together, maybe you could do some of these crazy ideas you were talking about. Maybe you could actually put up these mosques you were talking about. Maybe you could build, you know, some kind of library or some sort of a server that people could deposit information on. Maybe there's ways that we could do that. But the key to doing this, of course, is money. And it's horrible. I hate the fact that cash is necessary. But, unfortunately, cash is necessary. And so, for all the people who have donated or wish to donate, I thank you from the bottom of my heart. Special thanks also to the reporters who helped me find these amazing stories. Steve Axe, Pig Monkey, Druid Y. C. Maru, I'm probably screwing that up, Sylvanus, Walgawar, Mr. Echo, who's been around since Christ was a cowboy, Speaker, Ricky Rocket, Kevlar Gibbs, Jijin Machina, Jeff, Fortress Wog, Sylvanus, and Transix. And they're always there. Some of these guys send me like, you know, 5-6 emails a day, and they're really, you know, searching the web. So if you see these guys in the IRC or if you see them online, make sure you give props to them, because they really do help me out just a ton. If you have access to information or any other pertinent stories, please email them to Newsreel, that's N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L, at rantradio.com, and I will get that out for you people to, you know, ingest into your cranium. Digital baptisms this week: Landfear is now Overseer, and Soros Femme is now Sphinx Knight, and that's Knight, K-N-I-G-H-T. If you like the music in the background, make sure you pick up Rock Bitch Mafia by Green Nuns of the Revolution. You gotta love that title of both the band. The album is called Rock Bitch Mafia, and the band is actually called the Green Nuns of the Revolution. And whenever I listen to this album, I'm always thinking, you know, this must have been the other music they were playing in Blade before everybody else got there, you know what I mean? Because it has that sort of Blade Vampire Bloodbath, you know, Sabbath kind of rave scene feel to it. I just thought it was pretty cool. Anyway, until Monday, that's what server said. End of line.
I didn't get into this guy until after Roxanne Pulitzer, because we were both doing the same thing during the earlier years. This is the man who carries the illness forward for all of us. Thank God, into the fray and into the fire. Always wearing the right coat while traveling outside the realms of possibilities.
I do not remember the first time I read Hunter Thompson. It was sort of like a demented spiritual experience. It's no white light, just shit, that's it. Hunter Thompson.
An apple a day keeps the doctor away, right? I am the doctor. I took one look out here and saw fear. I don't know, how would you feel being the last dope fiend? There's an old civil rights axiom that the weakest link in any civil rights case is always the defendant. Yeah, imagine being a lawyer and getting a call from me. That's why I try to behave myself. And I advise the same to you, all of you. Well, that's good advice. This is, after all, a really aggressively Calvinist period. Let me offer my condolences to all of you in this generation that will have to grow up, live all your lives with the idea that that sex is death, and that the rain is poison. And now they have the sun, will give you cancer. And now Surgeon General is going to tell us that people get down to things like mead and near beer. Yeah, it isn't the law that bothers you so much. It's being chased around and scorned by your ex-peers. And Jesus, I would have to run scurry like a rat from place to place. I can't afford to feel guilty, and I don't really think I am. But for some reason, I have lived for 26 years without a job and 25 without sleep. I've never claimed to be anything but a nice guy and an athlete. And it's true. I'm a judicious user of drugs. Now, keep in mind that I'm a doctor. And plus, I am one of the highest living authorities on that subject. Well, who else? They're all dead. Shit. Well, if anybody had any DMT right now, I think I would share it with you. Somebody described it to me once as like acid, except that it's so compressed, it's like being shot out of a cannon for 45 minutes. Yeah. Bush has, all of his life and all of his career, made a pretty successful career of sort of minding the store. He has been a congressman, ambassador to China, ambassador to the UN, CAIE, vice president, and now president. That's a pretty good record. Only Richard Nixon surpasses it. Well, here we're talking about two of the most criminal, outside of Warren Harding and Ulysses Grant. Yeah, and Charles Manson. We're talking about serious criminals. This is a good, what do you call it, an enduring criminal conspiracy or continuing criminal conspiracy. It would, when the great scorer comes to write against these names, George Bush, Nixon, Warren Harding, Grant, will all be up there. And yet they both, in this century, Bush and Nixon have held almost every office that would be coveted by ambitious politicians or all-American boys. Nixon was everything except the governor of California. Oh, boy. That's a point of pride for everybody. Yeah, Nixon was on paper, one of the most successful politicians in the history of the country. Now, Ronald Reagan, he only ran for, two offices. Reagan really blitzed it. He was like, Roy Rogers. Yeah, we'll see Reagan about 40 years from now with weird plastic all over him. And here's an actor out of Hollywood who was elected with the help of three or four used car dealers and is a two-term governor of California, campaigning against debt, against the insane, against mental health, against almost everything, but mainly on an economic program of austerity and balancing the budget. The bastard left this state, I think, what was it, six times the debt. Then he runs for president. After that, two terms here, he runs for president. And then the bastard appoints his successor. Now, nobody's ever done that. Yeah, his underling, his boy, his capon. People are not beaten up anymore. I think I think Bush is right. This is a kinder, gentler nation of sheep. It's all been said before.